Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it is a great Thursday evening here in Central Kentucky, where I, Stephen Zimmer, am broadcasting from. And joining me shortly will be our lovely co-host, Holly Marie Philippi. That's right, Holly will be joining us in progress tonight. And tonight, yes, it's a Thursday evening. We're doing another Thursday. Had a little bit of unexpected, unfortunate news yesterday. And it's actually something that is poignant for creatives, because definitely, you know, there's some lessons to be learned and in a number of areas. But Holly and I had a dear friend who was a sound engineer for many years in Lexington, and just one of the most super individuals that I've ever known, personally, professionally. His name is Stanley Head, and I know him for about 25 years. And over the last few years, Holly also got to know him, and we actually spent time with him and his wife back in July. And then about a week later, we got to see just a world-class guitarist named Ben Lacey that was playing a show here in town. And we went with Stan and his wife there and just had an absolute blast. And but what I'm getting at is that we got the unexpected and sudden news yesterday that he had passed. And so, yeah, definitely it was a shock for all of us, but he is just, you know, but one of the things I want to point out on the beginning of the show is that, you know, the thing about him that I think, you know, has a great lesson for creatives is that all through his life, I mean, he did, back in the years ago, I used to work a lot in the music scene here in Lexington. And I did a lot of shows ranging from all ages, DIY shows to club shows to national acts and, you know, big some bigger names like Quiet Riot and, you know, Jackal and some of the, you know, hard rock and metal bands. If you're into metal, you'd probably recognize Nevermore, Flotsam and Jetsam, Overkill, bands like that. We did shows like on that level. And like I said, all the way down all ages level. But no matter what, I mean, he would treat the young kid band or the new band on the scene that had maybe five people out to see them, he would treat them all the same. I mean, he would give them the same fully professional sound mix, miking, and treat them all just like he would like Quiet Riot or Jackal. I mean, he's just such an encouraging, positive individual and just what an example of a consummate, what I call a consummate professional, that it didn't matter what kind of setting, how fancy the gig was. It didn't matter who was on stage or how popular they were. He always did his best. And that's one of the things that I think is a lesson from Stan and his legacy that I'd like to pass on to all of you tonight. He definitely is just a wonderful soul. And like I said, you know, we lost a really, really wonderful person from, you know, the creative community here in Lexington. And, but yeah, like I said, you know, just a consummate professional day in, day out, attitude-wise, work ethic-wise, and it didn't matter. I mean, whether you were that a high school band just out of the garage or whether you were Quiet Riot, he treated you with the same top-tier professionalism. And yeah, I think that's something that we can all learn from and carry on and all the things that we pursue. So looks like Holly is joining us. Let's see her. She's first in the chat room tonight. Hopefully everybody got the word. We did put out notices on all of our channels to let everybody know that we were going to do the show tonight instead of yesterday. So Holly, you there?
I'm here.
Did you want to say a few words about Stan before I move on to the news?
Well, it was just devastating to lose another person. My last living uncle passed last week unexpectedly, and then we got the news of Stan last night, and his motorcycle buddies called him Dirt, which was funny. That was his nickname, but we always called him Stan. And he was just such a great person to be around. I mean, he was always smiling, and he brought joy wherever he went. You know, he lit up a room, and just so much fun. I really enjoyed his company. I loved hanging out with him. And, yeah. I'm going to miss it. You know, I really am.
Yeah, he is a person, special person indeed. So, yes, here's to you, Stan. We love you.
Yep.
But tonight, we thought it would be kind of fun to go into a discussion of writing stories with holiday themes. And so we are going to get into that in just a moment. It's going to be a theme show, and we might open up for some calls. We'll definitely take comments from the chat room as well. A chat room is working. If you have any trouble with it, like I said, just refresh the page. Sometimes it gets a little finicky, but usually if you refresh the page and log in again, that will do the trick as far as getting you into it. But, of course, the Star Chamber Show is affiliated with the Imaginarium Convention, so we want to bring you up to date on all the latest news with the convention. And tonight we have several more panelists and two spotlighted guests to share with you that have been added since last show, which was a great one. Enjoyed talking about NaNoWriMo, and we had some fantastic calls between Sandy Lender and Carol Preflatish and Amy McCorkle, and I think respectively it was 11 years, 14 years, and 20 years of experience that each of them had with NaNo. So that just worked out perfectly as far as like getting like a true experienced perspective on NaNo. And I hope everybody is participating, is doing very well. I hope they got some tips out of last week's episode. If you missed it, definitely look it up in our archive and check it out, because it definitely had some good tips and advice for participating in NaNo, which we are only 9 days into, so not even a third of the way through the NaNo period. So, but yes, I know it's a bit of a marathon and a bit of a sprint at the same time. So, but with the but as far as Imaginarium news, I'll first share the panelists with you, and we welcomed S.B. Pierce, Tommy B. Smith, Carol Preflatish, and T. Lee Harris as official panelists. So you probably recognize a few of those names, definitely near and dear to us, and definitely Imaginarium favorites. But yeah, S.B. Pierce, Tommy B. Smith, Carol Preflatish, and T. Lee Harris were welcomed aboard as official panelists. And then we had two spotlighted guests as well. The first one announced was author, podcaster, cosplayer, and entertainer John B. Pica. And yes, he is amazing, and he's going to be back and performing at our 2024 awards banquet. Of course, you know him as the author of Tales of the Decoverse series and the host of the top-ranked pop culture podcast Back of the Cereal Box. And currently he appears as a Gen X character, Johnny Beyond, where he performs his magic and stories in theaters, dinner theaters, comic cons, and festivals around the U.S. And so, yeah, he is also a consummate professional and a great guy, and just an amazing performer, as anybody that's seen him at Imaginarium can attest. And but we announced him, and he will be back. And then also returning is the one and only award-winning author, publisher, and voice actor, E.G. Rowley. And yes, and Gene is one of our favorite folks. And yeah, he's of course one of the co-founders of Jumpmaster Press with Kyle Hanna, who we had on the show 2 weeks ago. And of course they are an award-winning multi-genre independent publishing house, just an amazing publisher. And E.G. himself is an award-winning playwright. He's a novelist, he's a voice actor and a radio host, and he's been twice nominated for a Voice Arts Awards Audiobook Narration of the Year Best Voiceover, twice nominated for that particular award. So, and if you ever hear his voice, you'll know what we're talking about, because, yeah, you could just listen to him for hours. he's, He is something else when it comes to voice talent. And, yeah, I'd love to be able to get him to narrate, like, some of my stuff because, yeah, it's just easy to listen to, very easy to listen to. But, yeah, welcome aboard to EG Rally and John Pike and all of our new panelists. Great group. And, yeah, there's going to be several more announced in the next few days. So keep an eye out on the Imaginarium site for that. And it's going to be, yeah, like I said, every week, new additions. So, and I also should give a reminder, though, yeah, if you want to get things like awards banquet dinner tickets, snap them up because those will go. Right now they are available. Same thing with Expo Space. And then also, yeah, I'm going to put in a little plug for my Marathonarium 2 workshop. We've got 7 of the 15 spots signed up for. But definitely love to have you come aboard with me. This year I'm going to be the editor on it, and it's a short story marathon workshop that has a follow-up period where you work with me as an editor, and then it gets put out in as an anthology, and this one will be Marathonarium 2 that will be supporting the Imaginarium Convention. So check that out. That's also on the site. And don't forget that we have the Imagine Awards. Those are open now for nominations. And we've got a full array of categories, full array that covers all kinds of genres and different kinds of writing, songwriting, writing for games, things like that. So, yeah, we definitely cover different spheres of writing and also, of course, screenplays. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with that. And so check it all out. But tonight's show is brought to you by Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender, and the one and only Ren Garcia. So, yes, Holly, Sandy's got the perfect spot because it is holiday-themed, and so it fits perfectly with our holiday-themed show tonight. So here we go with Sandy Lender and the new spot from her.
Give someone you love the gift of adventure for Christmas. Help them escape reality with an epic fantasy dragon girl power sword and sorcery saga that thrills and entertains. Send your loved ones to Unveiled for the holidays with a novel from author Sandy Lender. Visit Sandy's author page on Amazon or her website at authorsandylender.com and make it a fantastic Christmas.
Even has the sleigh bells, folks. Has the sleigh bells. I love it. And, yes, make good choices, folks, when you buy books and get some Sandy Lender titles right away. So here we go with Ren Garcia. And, yes, we're still waiting for that official confirmation, Ren, that you're coming next summer. But for now, here's a bit about the League of Elders series and the famous question that we love to answer.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
We are indeed weird enough for you, Ren Garcia.
We are, Ren, and you need to come in person to see that we are indeed weird enough for you next summer.
That's right.
Oh, it's just a great guy. I cannot wait till I get the official confirmation because, yeah, we're going to celebrate that. He's another one of those folks that's just a gem of a person and just
yeah,
amazing
that's
guy.
True.
Yeah, he's another one that. He's another one of those people, like I was talking about Stan, but Ren is another one of those people that always, always makes you smile. You can't help smiling around Ren. He's positive chi, no matter how you look at it, and always raises, uplifts the spirit in a room. Yeah, he's definitely one of those kind of people, very special individual. So, but yes, getting to our theme of the evening, yeah, we're getting to writing holiday-themed stories. And, of course, we, you know, talk about screenwriting. We're talking about writing for books. We're talking about even game stuff. And I thought it would be fun to lead it off, Holly, with talking about something that you and I experienced with your son, Noah, speaking of holiday themes. Because we, about a year or two ago, after we got back into playing some Dungeons and Dragons again. Noah had had a couple of kind of like almost like adopted sons to Holly, Jesse
well,
and Adam.
Yeah,
they're her boys. Like, and they came down and they did a one-off adventure that Adam created the storyline for. That involved us as we were playing elves in Santa's workshop, and there were nefarious things happening at the workshop and to Santa himself, and these elves were, and there were some elves that were very naughty behind the scenes that were up to no good with some dark magic elements, and so it was up to us to get involved and get to the bottom of it. But yeah, I mean, speaking of writing, you know, holiday themed stories, I mean, that was an example of doing it for gaming, at least. That was an absolute blast. So I thought it'd be fun to kick off the conversation with that. Yeah, because he took
so much fun, and you could go. You can make Santa evil. You can make Santa, you know, his jolly self. You could, you know, you could have a play and all kinds of things. Heck, you could play reindeer, for that matter. It's D&D, you know. I mean, you know,
yeah,
really, you could go anywhere with it. Make it holiday theme. You could do one for Thanksgiving, you know, be turkeys or something, and you're hunting down the pilgrims, you know. That'd be funny.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, homebrew gaming. Yeah, it allows a lot of room. And fun to see what you can do with it. Because we didn't just have just average elves and just making toys. Each one had different skill sets and they came from different departments
and
abilities.
We had like our elf tools. I forget what I was, but we all had like elf tools, you know, and that was our weapons. And, you know, I think I was a cobbler, wasn't I? Because I had my cobbler hammer. That was like, I was a cobbler. You know, because we all did different things. And so I made shoes. So, yeah, I had my little hammer where I tapped on the soles of the shoes, but it was like my weapon, you know. It had ability to really hurt somebody. So that was my weapon. It was just hilarious. So, yeah, I mean, you can really have fun, you know, with the holiday. I know there's hustle and bustle and everybody's busy and everything else, but it's also a very stressful time. And, not all of us are in the Christmas spirit. I am definitely not. It's just stressful for me anymore. I just see it as a materialistic, stressful holiday. And so I mean, it's not as fun for me like it was when I was a kid. But I still remember, you know, the childhood wonder and what it was, you know, great for. And I like to see my grandchildren enjoy it and, you know, to see their faces and all that. So, yeah. I mean, you can just go crazy with it, writing all kinds of game modules. That's one thing.
Yeah, writing the game, playing it was an awful lot of fun. But I think Adam did a great job on the storytelling side in the setup and creating the villain, the nefarious elves that were up to no good. They were trying to undermine Santa, and I was just dying for him to continue that because I had such fun playing it. I wanted to see him do like almost like holiday themed games, like do an Easter game, like do a Thanksgiving game, who knows, even a Valentine's game.
Oh, yeah.
Whole series kind of based around that because I had so much fun playing that.
But
yeah, it is fun when you incorporate the holidays into storytelling. And like there are things that, you know, take, you know, the holiday elements like that and use them front and center. Then there's other ones that use them in kind of like the setting or the backdrop where it's not necessarily, you know, just about like a holiday character like Santa or directly the plot's not like overtly, like directly mainly involved about the holiday itself, but it's part of the setting. To cite what I'm talking about is, you know, both the movies, classic movies, Gremlins and Die Hard, which both I think can be classified as
Christmas
movies.
Yes. 100%. Yeah, I mean, it isn't all just White Christmas and Miracle on, you know, 31, whatever it is. 34th Street. Ain't that awful? I've gave up on Christmas, so I don't know. I haven't watched that in years.
She's the Grinch.
I'm the Grinch. Yes, I love the Grinch.
But yes,
that was great.
But let's talk about Gremlins and Die Hard here.
Well, yeah, for Die Hard, because... yes, for your adventure lovers, and definitely Christmas, definitely I would say a Christmas movie.
But you could easily take those movies and put them into another setting, another time of the year. You could easily lift them out and adapt them to almost any time of the year with extract them. It's a type of storytelling where, yes, the setting is there. It is Christmas time. You know, there are Christmas elements that appear in them and are referenced in them, but it's not absolutely essential to the story. And that's one type of holiday storytelling that I think is, you know, can be very, very good and interesting. But again, it's not absolutely dependent on the holiday. You could have done Die Hard in another time or Gremlins.
That's the thing. You're referring to screenwriting right now. But with screenwriting, yeah, and we talked about this earlier. You know, I would say you got to think about your target audience, who you want to target here. You know, whether you want to stay secular or you want to go religious or you want to go, you know, traditional or you want to go horror or, you know, you want to go comedy like, you know, National Lampoon's movies, which are real gems. And so,
yes,
it just depends on your target audience and what genre you want to go in or if you want to mix the genre. You got to think about that before you ever start out of the gate. And, you know, that's going to guide you with what, like, traditions you're going to throw in there or, you know, a cultures. You could speak about different cultures. You could talk about Hanukkah. You could even do something about Hanukkah. What was the one that, Adam, what was his, Adam, oh, he's a real funny guy, the comedian.
Adam Sandler has some great songs about it.
Adam Sandler, yes. Oh, my God. Eight Crazy Nights, I think it was. It was hilarious. It was animated, and it was just absolutely
you're thinking
hilarious.
Eight Crazy Nights. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yes.
That was awesome.
It was hysterical, and I just think he's hilarious anyway. But, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I think it's based on that song, too, isn't it? The Hanukkah song.
Yes, he made a song.
He did. Yeah.
He made, Hanukkah. Yeah.
Oh, classic stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
So good. Yeah, even songwriting, you know, you could go comedic. You don't have to stay traditional, you know, do out of the box. But, yeah, there's so many different ways you could go. Tons of writing prompts. I mean, seriously.
Well,
you could go with the Christmas.
Well,
tree.
You mentioned one that's arguably my favorite Christmas movie of all time.
National Lampoon.
That's National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah,
iconic.
Lord, that's a good one.
And still to this day, you know, getting new fans. But in it,
you gotta,
I mean, they take
the
holiday. They take
the
holiday. Yep, where shitter's full. That's right. Got to empty it out. With one of Randy Quaid's best roles ever, I have to say. But the thing about that movie is, I mean, it's a holiday movie, and this is, you know, we're talking about writing. And what they did was they took archetypes of all the different things that everyone can relate to at the holidays. The stressed parents,
the hustle, the bustle,
you know,
the stress,
the husband, the father that's trying to make everybody happy, and the stress
money
of doing
worries.
That. You know, the kids are all, you know, excited about Christmas, and he's wanting to make them happy. The money worries, you know, the crotchety boss and the difficult situation at work, the annoying neighbors, the crazy family members, and it's kind of like, yeah, they took archetypes and kind of they're a little, maybe a little exaggerated for many people. Some
it's something
cases,
we all
not.
Can relate to,
yeah. But
yeah,
something
which,
we all
which
can
is
relate
exactly.
to.
It's hilarious.
It's something that everybody can relate to, and I think that's why that movie, you know, stands the test of time and holds up so well today, because here in 2023, you still have crazy neighbors. You still have annoying things from work. You still have the pressure, you know, if you're a parent or, you know, you're a husband or a wife, of dealing with, you know, trying to make everybody happy. You know, then of course all the chaos of family members and some family members that don't get along with others and in-laws and things like that. And yeah, I mean, it just takes everything. And even though it's set back when it was made, I mean, it translates to today because, you know, the writers worked with archetypes.
Uh-huh.
So it lasts.
Oh, yeah.
and it's still just as fun to watch today as it was back then. And I usually
watch it
once a year, so I can vouch for that. And I'm glad you mentioned the Randy Quaid scene, because that still has me on the ground every time I see that. But that's another type. Then of course, you got a lot of the movies that just outright, embrace the spirit of Christmas, or talk about, elements about it, like Miracle on 34th Street, or things like, those comedies like Charlie Brown Christmas Special, things like that have been, very iconic throughout the years. That just outright, embrace just the whole spirit of a certain holiday. And getting into it, and also the Thanksgiving special for Charlie Brown, that's another gem too. That's another category. Then you've also got the ones that which I call the bit of the genre benders. Now this one could get fun. And that's where you get into, like, if you're a horror fan, you get into the Krampus movies. And I love some of those. Yeah, because those are fun. When you take on, something like Krampus and work into lore and something like that, which is kind of like a little bit of an offshoot. it's definitely tied to Christmas in some way, but obviously, it's a horror genre kind of theme that takes a whole different tour than some of the other movies we've mentioned. But what about the horror genre and the fun that it has with there's a new one coming out a new Thanksgiving horror film coming out, I think, in a couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. What is that one?
Is there? What was that?
Yeah.
One? I know what you're talking about. I've seen the advertisement for it.
Yeah, I think it's called Thanksgiving Movie. I think it's actually called Thanksgiving Movie.
You're right. I think you're right.
Which
I'll
is
have
more...
to look that up. I think you're right. I want to mention one of my favorites, and I need to watch it again because I absolutely enjoyed it so much last year. I don't know if you remembered it, but you know me and my vampires and stuff. Silent Night. Silent
mm-hmm.
Night. Great movie. Loved it. Definitely horror. And then, of course, you got the old Krampus there, I mean...
Yes.
And I have not seen.
Now those could get
Red...
really those could get really bad. I mean, some of the Krampus movies, could be really B grade, which I enjoy them. But the one that I'm talking about, it's one from 2015, and it's just called Krampus. But it actually did make the theaters, believe it or not. But it's actually pretty intense. When you think about it, I won't give away spoilers, but just watch for the snow globe motif in it. You'll never look at snow globes the same way again. I love the way the writers incorporated snow globes into the storytelling.
It was hilarious. It absolutely was. It was
a little hilarious and unsettling at the same time.
Well, the other one was the sheriff off of Stranger Things. It was called Violent Night.
Oh, that was fantastic. I was trying
you
to
remember?
Think of that. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was trying to think of that. Now, David Harbour, who is the sheriff in Stranger Things. And actually, what's funny about that movie is Beverly D'Angelo is in it. With a Christmas Vacation reference.
Oh, that's true.
She's in it, so there's a tie to Christmas Vacation. Which I think is pretty fun, but there's a family that like having Christmas, and there's a big team of mercenaries that come to take them all hostage, and they actually have David Harbour play Santa Claus, and he's not exactly a soft, jolly Santa Claus in this movie. That's all I'm saying. The title says it all. It's not a kids movie. I guess it's classified as comedy action. I just called that up real quick to see what the category is comedy action, but I'd have to say that it's a little intense. It borders on a little bit on the edge of some horror elements, I think, just because it's a pretty intense violence in it. It's a fun and kind of funny movie to watch. John Leguizamo is in it as well.
Because most times, you know, if you hear Christmas movies, people don't automatically think a horror film. But, oh, man, there's some great ones, you know, that are based around Christmas.
No, there's a ton of them. I mean, if you look in the horror genre, I mean, oh, man, they've done everything with Santa Claus.
I mean, it goes on and on. Silent Night, Deadly Night, that's an old one. That was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
They even consider I just looked it up. They even considered Eyes Wide Shut a creepy Christmas movie.
Eyes Wide Shut, really?
Yeah, called The Game.
Stanley Kubrick. Yeah.
It said it technically may not be a horror, but it takes place Christmas.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And that's one of my favorite movies because of the symbolism, folks. If you want to go down rabbit holes, look up stuff on Eyes Wide Shut and the symbolism of that movie and what Stanley Kubrick did and what happened to Stanley Kubrick around that movie. That's all I'm going to say. It's quite a rabbit hole, folks. It's a deep dive.
Yeah.
We'd have to do probably about a two-hour podcast just to talk about what the symbolism is in that one. But it gets at some issues that might be relevant to today's world. Just saying.
Oh,
but,
100%.
It's a genius one. But
and they
yeah, if you want to go.
I don't consider this horror, but I guess it's children's Christmas horror. Favorite movies of all time. I watch it all year round. Of course, I love Jack. And it's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yep.
One of my favorite movies of all time, as Stephen knows very well. I'm in love with Jack, and Jack's wonderful, and he's the spirit animal. But, yes, 1993, good. I'm getting old. But
time flies.
Phenomenal. That's not animated. That's, what do you call it, claymation? I guess you would consider that? What would you consider that, honestly?
Oh, I'm just drawing a brain gap right now. Let's see here.
I guess a mixture.
The Nightmare Before Christmas. I'm going to try to figure it out.
I guess you could call it animated. Well, here, I've got my 13-year-old grandson next to me.
Stop motion.
I was going to say, would you consider Nightmare Before Christmas animated
animation.
Animated.
It's stop motion.
See,
I'm looking at it.
He says animated too with kids, but he says
stop motion.
Yeah.
that's where frame by frame. That's painstaking. But yeah, I couldn't just
work.
My brain went south there. But yeah, there's a lot of good stop motion movies that did stop motion. It's not a Christmas movie, but the fantasy movie Dragon's Lair. Dragon Slayer, back from the 80s is a gem that used that type of technology, but you don't see, it's so painstaking and difficult that, you're not going to probably see a whole lot of that today. It's mainly moved to CGI, but that was absolutely beautiful back in when Tim Burton did that movie back when. Great movie.
Phenomenal movie. And it's a Halloween movie. It's a Christmas movie. It's a cross genre, you know. And they even throw a little Easter in there. They kind of throw it all, you know, in there because even the Easter bunny's in it. So.
Yeah.
At one time. So yeah, it's really fun. But what are you showing me? Oh, my grandson was showing me something. But I love the horror Christmas movies. But if that's not your cup of tea.
The typical one you're going to run across storytelling wise is the crazy person that puts on a Santa suit and becomes an axe murderer. You're going to see a bunch of those in the B movies. There's a bunch of those. and some of them are not so good. So, but some of them are quite, you know, there are some out there that are kind of clever. And that's why I think the one that you mentioned, Violent Night, is a great idea, great example of a clever one, because it's not just somebody that's putting on a suit, you know, to kind of impersonate Santa. It's actually, it is Santa Claus. It is Saint Nick. and he's not presented in the usual way, which I think was quite clever.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he definitely goes back to his, let's say, I don't want to give away spoilers, his Scandinavian roots. Just run with that as far as his origin. Yeah.
You can say that.
You'll get,
and
you'll
even
get
writing,
the idea.
You can write, you know, you can write short stories that you can, you know, promote your other works. Just write short stories. You could do horror. You could do traditional. You could talk about your culture or traditions in your family, and roll with it. Mm-hmm. Use it as a writing prompt and actually roll with it. And you could sell those during the holiday season. You could offer them even as a, like, write a short story and say, hey, you know, you buy a copy of this, you get a free copy for the holidays of this book. So it's like two for one. You know, you can offer deals like that, and that'll entice readers to, well, yeah, let's check that out. I get a two for one special, you know. And, you know, you could use them as promotional things like that. Give them away with a purchase of your other book. Never give away your books or your work two for one deal. Give it away with a purchase of another book. That's not actually, like, you know, giving away your work, because it is hard work, and we all know that. It takes a lot of painstaking length to publish a book. So,
and some people do satire. Yeah, and some people will do satire. You know, definitely this cover cracks me up a bit, and it's not being political, folks. Yeah, but yeah, one of our I guess imaginary, the wonderful James Sabata. He's just an amazing guy. He's very, very funny guy. But he wrote a North Pole political parody where he, the book is called Trumpus, where he basically turned the former president into kind of like a Krampus type figure, and so. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, may or may not be your cup of tea, but definitely, you know, as far as, like, you know, as far as how you feel politically, but yeah, it's definitely a satire and parody, and it's definitely the cover alone. It is funny, no matter what perspective you have, but definitely.
Yeah, that's good, you know.
But it's an example of. Yeah, some of the little twists and turns that you can take with holiday things. You can even turn them into satire,
the holidays, you can get
parody.
Silly. Yes.
Yeah.
Make Santa Claus. I don't know, somebody, you know, you know, and or whatever, and make him a figurehead or something. You know, make him Putin or whatever. I mean, seriously,
you can do ridiculous fun things. Yeah.
You can do
anybody.
Fun. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And just roll with it. And then you could go the traditional route, which is, you know, with, like, our English traditions, with the Christmas trees, with Jolly Saint Nick, especially, like, the kids, you know, you could write a children's book. I don't know, put a new spin on something.
Sure.
Rudolph Goes Dancing, or Rudolph, you know, whatever. Because Rudolph and the Frosty movies are, like, iconic. And you have to watch them every year, you know. I mean, let's get real. Christmas Carol, phenomenal movie.
Those are stop motion. Those Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Frosty.
Yeah, and they
Santa Claus Comes
there's
Down.
There's several of those. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Chris, you know. Old how
true.
Santa Claus came about, and was it Meister Burger was the villain in it?
The Burgermeister.
Yeah, that
fantastic.
Was awesome.
And then you had the Abominable Snowman, whatever he was.
It was the Abominable Snowman.
Abominable Snowman, that's right. really, really cute.
And of course, for really me, you know, Rudolph and Fonzie, you know, the island of all the discarded toys, and that always,
yes,
kind of hits me in the feels. And but hey, but the, you know what presided over that little island was a winged lion. By God, that was cool.
Right.
He was like king of it.
Right.
So yeah, 2 bonus points for that for sure. But
those are iconic.
Yeah,
but you can even do a parody off of them. You know, you can take that as a
oh yeah, you can parody those
with that. Easy. Home Alone went on and on and on.
Yep.
Definitely Christmas movies. Hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
You could roll with that idea, you know, and do something like that. A Christmas story, of course. And then the miracle. Elf's another one. That's a gem.
Yep. Yeah, that's Will Ferrell series. That's a good one to do.
Scrooged. Oh, my God. Do you remember Scrooged?
Oh, so many various variations of that one. That's a really good example.
Bill Murray.
If you want to look
at
storytelling approaches, look at all the different approaches to the Scrooge story, Christmas Carol, you know, that type of thing.
Hilarious.
You'll see
a lot of
different genres. You're going to see a lot of different twists and turns. You're going to see some that have I've seen some movie versions that have a female Scrooge, as you know. There's lots of little twists and turns that they've taken with that story. And
yes, it's true. And then where you take the traditional, and here's thinking outside the box, and somebody rolled with this, is all the Santa Claus stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Tim Curry, Tim Allen,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Santa Claus movies. I mean, they made several, you know, and that was somebody just taking, Santa Claus and running with it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, then I have to bring this series up because it just makes me laugh. and I'm going to give you a hint, Holly. It starred Billy Bob Thornton playing Santa. Well, he wasn't really Santa. But
God, what was that? He was drunk. He was a drunk.
Bad Santa.
Bad Santa.
Yeah, Bad Santa and Bad Santa too.
Oh, that movie's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
That
was funny.
A good screenwriting. That's taking Santa to a new level.
Yeah. They definitely it's insane. But yeah, it's definitely worth a watch if you want a good holiday season laugh, for sure. And of course, we'd be remiss not to mention, of course, the avalanche of Hallmark style movies and Hallmark style movies that come out each year, which, you know, are definitely insanely popular.
I happen
to have a soft spot for him. Becca Harrison does as well. She appreciates these movies. They make you feel very warm and fuzzy. They are meant to make you feel warm and fuzzy.
My God.
That's why I like them.
Easy to write one. It's some stranger moves to this little hip town and ends
formula.
Up buying a cottage that's named the Holly Cottage, or her name's Holly. Or
one that was like the Holly Lodge.
The Holly Lodge.
I'm going to find that because that was the best movie ever, I think. Definitely.
You need to write,
Holly,
a whole series, Holly Chronicles.
Christmas at Holly Lodge. And it had Allison Sweeney, Jordan Bridges, and had a pretty good cast in it. Came out in 2017. But, Christmas at Holly Lodge.
It wasn't pretty good. It was bad. It really wasn't.
But you have to admit that I was laughing every time they said Holly in that movie. Yeah.
Finds it hilarious.
Oh.
Oh, Lord. And his favorite song, Holly Jolly Christmas. So,
Holly Jolly Christmas.
It's that season.
Yeah.
It's that season.
Yeah. They are. They now that type of storytelling, you hit it. I mean, it is more of a formula style. You kind of know what's going to happen.
Definitely formula.
No matter what movie you're watching on Hallmark you kind of know that there's not going to be too many twists. You're not going to end up with a real big, awful ending that leaves you depressed. It's going to end good.
Yeah.
And you kind of
know
what's going to take place.
You don't have to worry. You know it going in. It's going to end in a happy ending.
Yeah.
You already know.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm trying to tell you. Why do you love me so much?
the girls could choose the rustic down to earth guy over the, you know, the big city slickster rich guy. And
yeah.
which of course never happened in the real world. Or almost never happened. But hey, but in this world, by God, it does. And it's kind of nice. does feel good. But yeah, definitely. Not only Hallmark Channel, but I mean, it's the basis for multiple channels. I mean, those kind of movies, I mean, they're insanely popular. I think they're guilty pleasures for a lot of people. You know, that type of storytelling is something a lot of people like. And I'm just one that, you know, I love them. I'll say it, but a lot of people don't talk about it too much out loud, but those millions of viewers are coming from somewhere. So, and because they keep proliferating every year, I see like Netflix making
oh
more
my
of
God,
these kind of
Lacey
movies.
Marie,
or
Lacey Marie, the writer Lacey Marie, she loves them too.
Fantastic talent. Yeah.
Yeah. Love them.
I
want to mention a true gem. This deals with like the childhood magic and the whole joyfulness of Chris was the Polar Express.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now that took the ball and ran with it. I mean, creatively.
Yeah.
Yeah, built the whole mythos around
it. It had
around
a little bit of everything. It had the spirit of Christmas.
Yeah.
It had friendship. It had, you know, all this different elements to it. Phenomenal, phenomenal movie.
And
yeah,
you got
that
the Grinch.
Was a true gem.
Not in the same spirit as Polar Express, but the Grinch. That played,
the Grinch
played with it. Yeah, that was a fun one. And then there's some movies that, well, they'll take some Christmas elements and creatively work them in, even if they're not set in our world. And by that one, I'm going to bring up Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Think back to it, Holly. Who shows up on the sled to give the Pevensey siblings their weapons and such? Father Christmas. And it's
Father
in the middle
Christmas.
Of what? Winter. So there's so even in other genres and types of storytelling, sometimes Christmas elements will be worked into them, and if they're done right, like I think they were in that case, I mean it's awesome. I mean, I think it really works well, where he is, you know, definitely a figure in Narnia, and you know he's bringing the kids, you know, these gifts that, you know, they're going to have to use against the White Witch. And it fits a definite plot point in the story. Fits with the, you know, snowy, wintry setting, you know, since the witch has still got her dominion. And but definitely, but being, you know, in the form of gifts, like from Father Christmas. I mean, yeah, they played a lot of C.S. Lewis played a lot of little elements there. And I thought very cleverly worked that into the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. As a kid, I loved it, and since a lot of younger readers were, you know, have been the ones introduced to that, to me, I think it's a lot of fun for younger readers to encounter that in that particular book. I don't know if that's some. Did you ever read *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe* when you were young?
No.
I was going
to
ask you.
I will. You love it so much. I've watched the movies, but no, I've never actually read the books.
But yeah, that's using you know, Christmas elements or holiday elements, and
right,
of course,
right.
You know,
and
we just passed Halloween.
That's more of your, but it went kind of religious and secular. I mean, it really went both ways.
Yeah,
it had underlying tones of religion, but
yeah, you can enjoy Chronicles
secular.
Of Narnia without getting into the metaphors or the allegories. You could definitely enjoy it on the surface, or if, you know, if you're inclined to the, you know, some of the deeper messages in it, then yeah, it's there. But I think C.S. Lewis did a real good job of straddling the line of, you know, not being too preachy about that stuff, but making it kind of weaving it into the story where it feels natural. Father Christmas was, I think, a neat addition into that.
And if you want to straight up, I do want to mention, I have the movie somewhere. I haven't seen it in a hot minute. Need to watch it again. Was the Nativity Story that came out years ago. Oh, that movie was phenomenal. But that's the religion side of it. But it was a great movie. So well done. And another one that it isn't religious, it's secular, but it was a heart-touching one with the Christmas shoes that Rob Lowe played in. About the boy, it was like the song, about the boy bought the Christmas shoes for his dying mother. He wanted to buy shoes for her, and he couldn't afford them, you know, but he took what he could and went to the store. Yeah, that was a good movie, too. That was a more heartfelt one, you know. That dealt with more of a traditional, but it had the elements of, you know, poverty and getting into all that and the materialistic side of it. But he just wanted his mom to pass away with good shoes.
Sometimes the writer will take make use of a holiday element to bring into a story, and the whole movie is not necessarily thought of. I mean, we mentioned like Die Hard and Gremlins, but I mean, obviously, you know, some Christmas setting or background is present, you know, throughout, you know, those movies. But okay, here's a fun one for you for Thanksgiving. Rocky, the first Rocky movie. You don't think of that outright as a Thanksgiving movie, but one of the big scenes that takes place is at Thanksgiving table. And they have a big mess that takes place with Rocky and his you know, Adrian and Polly at the Thanksgiving table. And, you know, it's a mess, you know, about the trouble of family gatherings. And it's something, you know, a lot of people can relate to. A lot of tend to be, you know, a mess sometimes bringing together everybody at Thanksgiving. Often there's a lot of turmoil sometimes at family gatherings like that. But Rocky, one of the main scenes in Rocky is actually a Thanksgiving scene, if you think about it.
That's
and I thought
true.
That was, yep. Yeah,
that so, is true. Yeah, I mean, there's so many different.
Because that's when Rocky actually goes. After Polly throws the turkey outside, Rocky and Adrian actually, that's when they do their famous ice skating scene, and that's actually when their romance kind of sets in. So it fits a really good plot point. So, now you're making me want to see Rocky. It's a Thanksgiving movie. I never thought about that before, but I just think, but we were thinking about scenes that, you know, appear with where there's holiday elements that appear, and I was thinking, oh yeah, there's Thanksgiving element in Rocky, the first one, and it works.
You're right.
So in that case, the writers, you know, pulled in Thanksgiving elements, even though the entire movie is not, you know, a Thanksgiving setting or a Thanksgiving season setting. In the way that, you know, Christmas season is often a setting. But writers can make use of a holiday just for a scene that takes place as part of the story. I mean, sometimes I think that can be very effective because it's something that's relatable if you're doing, you know, working with audiences to today's world. You know, and like I said, even that, you know, that was made in the 70s, that Thanksgiving blow up. Yeah, people can relate to it even today, you know, on Christmas Vacation. They can relate to those characters even today. So,
you
end up giving some elements that cross generations and that people can relate to years down the line. So, yeah, it's not something that's going to necessarily date your story or pigeonhole it in the time setting that it's in. Sometimes, it'll transcend time a little bit. And give your story relevance, you know, for years to come. Yeah, especially with an ongoing iconic kind of holiday element.
Yeah, you're throwing the iconic elements and running with it, and yeah, I mean, it'll last, you know, and be pertinent for the end of time.
And look at the look at the possibilities now, because what is it you told me the other day, that Mickey Mouse is now available for storytelling? God knows what they're going to come up with.
Mickey
there.
And Minnie are now officially divorced, and he is
But they're public domain? Are they public
domain
now? They're public domain. Make sure of that, folks, because that's what
I'm looking
told.
Right now.
I knew it was coming up.
That's what my son told me. Mickey Mouse, public.
Let me
look it up.
Of crazy stuff around that. And I guarantee you, they're going to use Mickey for some holiday stuff, too. Okay, maybe one of you listening to us will do it.
It says the earliest incarnation of public domain work. Okay, the earliest incarnation of Mickey Mouse, as well as Minnie, enters the public domain in 2024 through Steamboat Willie and the Galloping Yacht Show. The house at Pooh Corner by A.A. Milne, including the Kerry Tigger, enters public domain in 2024.
Uh-oh, we're going to have more of those
Tigger
movies.
Yeah, they're working on a two. They're going to make a two. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Oh, dear God. But what I'm saying is, though, if you are a storyteller, if you are a storyteller, though, I mean, yeah, that gives you a fodder for satire, parody, creative holiday stories. I mean, yeah, when you get an iconic character enters the public domain, like you know, the flagship character of Disney, for God's sake.
Right.
There isn't it. He is the OG. He's the OG, folks.
Yeah, see, there's a fine line because it says, should Mickey Mouse be available to the public? This act made copyright 70 years after the creator's death. So currently, Mickey will be available to the public in 2023. It is very likely that Disney will try to extend the copyright duration again, but Disney should let him into the public domain. Even though Mickey will be available in 2023, it's only his past version. So you can't use his current version, but you can use the Steamboat Willie version.
That works. Somebody's going to have fun with that.
It's still iconic. It's still, everybody knows that's Mickey Mouse. So it really doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah,
no,
next year I'm interested to see what happens with that.
Yeah. But there you go, folks. There's something to watch and possibly make use of for writing a crazy holiday story or a genre mashup. Or maybe you might want to write something nice and wholesome. Who knows? Maybe like the Hallmark movie using this version of Mickey sometime down the line. You could do it all.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've given you tonight. Hopefully tonight we've given you some good examples. I mean, we've covered Dungeons and Dragons. We've covered all kinds of genres and types, where holidays are the setting, or if they're essential, or if they're referenced, or if they're – I mean, we've given you a full range tonight, so hopefully we've given you some perspective on holiday-themed storytelling. Holly, if you do you have any wind-up comments here? So we've got about a little over a minute left.
Well, I want to say that it says, what bugs you? I have a question. What bugs you every year at Christmas? Mine has got to be Mariah Carey. She's unfalling, and I am not happy. I am not happy. That's going to be my last statement on that. I can't not stand her squealing and crying. And I no. And if she's on in a store – just walk into, I will turn around and walk out. I'm not kidding.
You know what to do, folks.
It's nails on a chalkboard, so if everyone
send Holly,
really pissed me off, there you go.
Send Holly Mariah Carey gifts, tag her in those. Make her day. Give Holly a big smile so she's thankful for the holidays.
No. Absolutely not. Can't stand it. Can't stand it. What bugs you the most, Zimmer, before we sign off?
What bugs me the most at the holiday season? Shoot, because I do love the general spirit of the season, and I love, and I've already said that, you know, I do love those quote-unquote cheesy holiday films, you know, the Hallmarks and all that stuff. I do enjoy those quite a bit. I guess I don't really have a firm answer on that. Because there's nothing I will agree with you. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Mariah Carey stuff, so maybe I could cheat and use that as well. I do like genre benders. I do like the, you know, when they take things and do satire, or I do like things when they do horror. I love all the mishmashes that are done. So, yeah, there's not really anything that on the surface I don't like. I mean, obviously, there's some bad movies, bad books and stuff that, you know, individually. But, in general, no. I mean, I have a lot of fun with all this. So, yeah, I think that's been a good discussion, Holly.
I think so, too. I hope we gave people some ideas to run with and, some thinking outside the box. And maybe they got an idea about to read a book or actually watch a movie. Maybe one we talked about that they hadn't seen.
Tonight. Rocky, Thanksgiving movie. Yes.
Wow.
All right,
good
Holly.
Movie,
well,
so.
Do you want to wrap it up and we'll call it for the week here?
I'll wrap it up. All righty. Good night to everyone and have a productive weekend. Create something wonderful. And we will catch you next Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great show. And we'll have a great guest. And we'll talk to you then and hope we've inspired you. Good night.